The Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show is coming up next right here on the TJRS Radio Network online radio at its best.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
Now I'm covered.
Now for the first time, you can be covered with a quality health plan from the new Health Insurance Marketplace, part of the healthcare law. It's where brand name companies offer plans you can compare side by side, and it's the place to get lower monthly payments.
I'm covered.
So if you have an accident, get sick, or just need a checkup,
I'm covered.
We're covered.
Now we're covered.
Enroll now at the Health Insurance Marketplace at healthcare.gov.
Online radio at its best. Online radio at its best.
If you're resident, map of the South.
Let's do this.
I'm telling you, I am first very honored that you would join me tonight.
He has a very limited time spot, so we want to bring in Mr. Alan Sarrell right away.
Hey, how are you, Kathleen?
You know what? I'm going to make a do with a do, baby.
Man, what's crack-a-lackin', baby? What's crack-a-lackin'?
It's time for the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show.
Don't try to call me out, princess. You can take your love and true purpose and stick it. She's a bitch.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
This week, on the Serious Side.
A rallying cry for fast food workers ringing out again. They hit the protest lines Thursday. Their demand? Higher pay. The federal minimum wage currently stands at $7.25 an hour, the same level it's been at since 2009.
Following a couple of months of negotiations, the Oprah Winfrey Network announced yesterday that they had purchased the rights to a 6-to-8-part documentary series that will follow the life of Michael Sam, the 249th pick of the draft by the St. Louis Rams, who is poised to be the first openly gay player in league history. If he sticks, the working title for the series is, quote, The Untitled Michael Sam Project. Said Sam, if seeing my story helps somebody else accept who they are and to go for their dreams too, that's great, close quote.
Robert Copeland, the police chief in the town of Wolfboro, New Hampshire, used the N-word when describing President Obama. Residents in the village of 6,000 people and beyond immediately started calling for his resignation. Copeland has refused to apologize for his remark.
Good morning and welcome to the Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jams Jazz Cafe, right here on the TJRS Radio Network. Good Sunday morning to you folks. Today is May 18th, 2014, and you're in tune to the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TJRS Radio Network online radio at its best. My name is J. Ryle, and once again, welcome and thank you for joining us. We never share the stage by ourselves, at least I don't. Let me introduce you to my players. First up, she is the host of Ladies First Radio. She's also the host of the True Purpose Development Show, a TV show that's located in the Detroit area, that's seen in the Detroit area, I should say, Transforming Detroit. She's also one of the regulars on the J. Ryle Show and the author of the book Pregnant in the Spirit. Let's say good morning to the one and only Dr. Princess Adia. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Doing great this morning. Thank you so much for joining us. The man who gets the first and last word here on the Serious Side, my main man, the one who really runs everything around here, the one and only Mr. L.E.S. Good morning, Mr. L.E.S. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Jay. Good morning, Dr. Adelia. How are you guys doing this morning?
Very well, thank you. Good morning.
The call-in number is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. You can participate in the conversation this morning. We have some great stuff on the agenda for you. Of course, our political strategist, Jerome Esprit, usually joins us after his commitment with Clear Channel Radio. Hopefully, we'll see him this morning. But we have a great show on tap. Nevertheless, let's get into it. First up. First of all, once again, the call-in number is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. All right, look, hold the pickles, hold the lettuce, but do not hold the paychecks. Workers from across the world, across the nation, are planning a global walkout demanding a pay increase from minimum wage to $15.10 an hour and union support. Why are Republicans fighting this minimum wage legislation? Let's listen to a clip, and we'll talk on the other side.
This is our way of getting them to listen. If they don't listen, we're going to keep doing what we're doing until we get our answers.
A rallying cry for fast food workers ringing out again. They hit the protest lines Thursday.
We are in solidarity.
Their demand? Higher pay. The federal minimum wage currently stands at $7.25 an hour, the same level it's been at since 2009. Workers want it raised to $15 an hour.
Workers are saying, look, we've been working hard, we've been working longer hours, we're more productive than we were several decades ago, but it hasn't paid off in terms of higher wages. And so with our backs against the wall, workers are saying the next step is really to walk off the job, to organize.
It's on the White House's plate, too. President Obama wants to raise the federal minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. It's already rising to that level for new government contractors, but it's a contentious issue when it comes to approving it for all workers, one that Congress is dragging its feet on.
At the federal level, for example, you have lobbies like the restaurant industry, like the retail industry, companies like Walmart and McDonald's that devote an incredible amount of resources to influencing and blocking any minimum wage increase. And so elected officials often find themselves divided between the message they're hearing from their voters and the message they're hearing from their funders.
Even Warren Buffett doesn't know what to do about it.
That's the toughest question you can ask me because I've thought about it for 50 years and I don't know the answer on it.
Critics of the wage hike say it's a simple formula. Higher wages equal less corporate profits equal fewer jobs.
We're back, 347-850-1272. We're having some serious technical difficulties, so guys, please bear with us as we try to figure this out. Let's start with you, Mr. Elias, the conversation. Why is this such a big issue, and why can't employers understand the importance of ensuring that people are not living in poverty in this nation?
Because of greed. That's all it is. It's a greed thing. In New Zealand and Australia, the minimum wage is $18.80 an hour. I mean, you can look it up, you can Google it. So for them to sit there, I mean, and these are fast food jobs, all, so if they can make it on their end, not go out of business. And I had this argument with a guy at work. He said, if we did that, that would make the hamburger, the Big Mac, $6 for a Big Mac, which is a crock of garbage. No, you know, it's just greed, man. So you won't make $5 billion, you'll make $4 billion this year. You know, McDonald's is a billion-dollar corporation. Billions and billions of dollars of corporation. And everybody that gets to McDonald's, come on. As many people go to McDonald's every day, all day long, you can afford to pay your workers. You can afford it. So you won't make as big a profit as you can, because you can make. So what? Then your workers will be able to afford a living. You are. Bottom line, pay people what they're worth.
What are your thoughts on this, Dr. Prince's idea?
Well, first, I do want to say this, that unfortunately, in those countries like you mentioned, Mr. Elias, the cost of living is different, too, and
it's
higher.
Higher.
So when they, the cost of living is much higher. So when they are charging and they're allowing them to make more money, typically, it's very comparable to the lifestyle that they are living where they are. And even that's even true between the states here in the United States. Some places, things are way more expensive, although, unfortunately, ours, you have cost of living that is higher in California than it is in Michigan, or it's cheaper in the South as it is here. And unfortunately, the minimum wage doesn't change. So it's minimum wherever you are, and that's very sad. So you have people that are in other places, they're making the same amount of money, the same minimum wage, and the cost of living is extremely high. I can't even imagine how it is here in Michigan. You know, it's already tough for people to make it here in Michigan. Let alone for someone to be on minimum wage in California.
I mean, it's sad. I mean, talk about poverty. It's sad. It's horrible. So I believe that they need to make a change. And I don't even understand why are we still talking about this. It's like, do it already. I mean, it's very clear, and it's sad.
You know, I didn't know where you was coming down on that for a minute. I was like, okay, where are you going with this? Okay, I see where you, I saw how you brought it together, but I'm like, okay, are you for it or against it? But I understand exactly what you're saying. You know, the bottom line is, I guess what you're saying is we should look at this not only as a blanket situation where we're taking everyone from, you know, minimum wage, I think, what is it, $7.95 an hour to, I think the president's proposal is $10 or 10 cents an hour. You're saying it should really be based on the region, Dr. Princess O'Dea, because that may help people in some regions, but if the cost of living is extremely high, like in California or in D.C., they should consider taking it to a higher wage. Is that what you're saying?
Well, what I'm saying is thinking of, well, that is another way to look at it, or I should say to expound on what I said. Even as I'm saying that, yes, I mean, that would be a great consideration, but I was speaking to the matter that no matter what, it's sad. It's low wherever you are, period. It's low wherever you are. But
okay.
Even to another level, think about this. It's even really, really sad for those who are in other states within the United States where the cost of living is much, much, much higher. And they are still at this base of $7. So, yeah, well, maybe another option for the president is, okay, thanks a lot for the 10. We should have more. And furthermore, why are we even having to have an argument about it? How can people feel that it's not important to change? How can we even have this discussion? No matter where you look within the United States, $7, if you can't survive off of it. You can't survive off of it. And even working a government job at minimum wage, they won't even allow you in many cases to get assistance from the government to offset your issue. It's like you choose. Either you want to be, either have the government assistance or work the minimum wage job. And when you have, for example, these single mothers that have these children, they'll decide to get on the government assistance because guess what? The government's going to give them, if they have four or five kids, they're talking like $800 a month for food and some cash assistance. They're not even going to make that at a minimum wage job. So it's critical on all levels. Those who are talking about, you know, the people that are on government assistance and they're just trying to live off of milk the system, well, how about you increase the minimum wage? Maybe we can address that issue. Maybe some things will change.
Well, you know, if you look at it now, the average worker, average fast food worker in America makes about $9.50 an hour, Ms. Elias, which equates to approximately $18,000 a year, which is still, you know, $7,000 less than what the U.S. consider people living in poverty, a family of four living at $25,000 a year. That's still $7,000 less than the poverty line. And so I guess I'm not following why this is such a big issue. Now, you hit the nail on the head, I think, when you start talking about wages, because that's what this is all about. You know, you have, you know, 9 out of the 15 most richest people in this nation, the most rich people in this nation, I should say, are people from the Walmart family.
Yes.
You know, from Walmart. And, you know, and they're crying. How can you have a nation where 9 out of the 20 most powerful people in this nation or richest people in this nation are from one family? And for them to complain about this, it's mind-boggling. Because, you're not going to make, you know, so many billions, we're going to affect your bottom line? Because that's what this is all about, right, Mr. Elias, the bottom line?
Right. Right. It is. It's about profit. It affects your bottom line. And that's what happens, man. Most companies are making billions and billions and billions of dollars in profit every year, and they don't want to give nothing back. That was like the guy from Papa John's when he said how much he had to pass on to the consumer And that was his thing. If I had to pass that on to the consumer, you know how much it would cost per pod to give all my employees health insurance? I think it ended up being like 15 cents extra per pod, so to give his people the Affordable Care Act. So, look, man, the bottom line is this. You got these corporates, you got these people who are so greedy, they don't want to give anything back. Look, bottom line, you know, I agree with it because it was 188 states fast food vendors around the states that walked out, and one of them was at the Rock and Roll Hall, Rock and Roll McDonald's in Chicago. It shut the place down, and that's one of the most popular McDonald's in Chicago. It shut it down, and it was unbelievable, man. You know, and that's just the power of people walking out. You know, and what could they do when all the employees walked out? If people stuck together and everybody walked out from these fast food vendors, guess what would happen? And nobody went in there to support them, they would have to pay what they had to pay, man. Bottom line, it's just ridiculous that you want people to survive off of $7 an hour, you know, and these people got families and everything else. You got people working 4 and 5 jobs, you know, and it's ridiculous, man. More profits, and that's all people want is more profit. I want more, I want more, I want more. And when is enough enough?
You know, the one thing I always hear amongst some of the white people that I know is the fact that, you know, the bottom line is that these people, if they want to make more money, get a better education. If they want better opportunities, then they need to put themselves in those positions. I guess I don't understand why that's such a big issue with these people when they say things like that. Because, you know, you talk about when you use the word lazy and you use these terms towards African Americans, and it just dawned on me one day while I was driving in a car, Mr. Lee, it's like, well, who had slaves? You know, I mean, yeah. Think about it. Who owned slaves? You want to call black right. people lazy. You want to call black people they're not smart enough to get better jobs. I mean, who helped put them in those situations? Now, listen, is there a little bit of truth to what they're saying? Absolutely. And what I mean by that is this, is that if you do want a better opportunity, you know, you need to do that for yourself. But because of the fact there's some, you need people to work those jobs. So if yes. there's a need for those people, Dr. Princess Odea. So to sit here and say, well, if everybody, you know, if you want to be in a better position, then you just need to get a better education. Let's say that everybody did that. Who would be working at McDonald's? Who would be working at some of the fast food places? Hey, look. Everybody fits a role in society. I just can't understand why they are fighting giving people more money, because if you give them more money, what they're going to do with that money, Dr. Princess Odea? They're going to spend it.
Yeah,
they're going to pump it back into the economy. So with their argument is foolish when you look at it on its basis. What say you?
I concur 110%. It makes absolutely no sense at all. It addresses so many issues that people are bellyaching about, especially even the Republicans. It could address some of the issues that they have. They have an issue with the government assistance. They have an issue with people living off of the system. They have an issue with people not having jobs. They have an issue. Well, we're attempting to do something that can address these things, and just not just the Republicans, but people are fussing about it, and they're having a problem. You know what it shows? It shows that there is really, definitely, like Mr. Elliott said, an extreme sense of greed. It's like they're gloating off of the poverty that is within the country. They have no desire to help it, and they want to suppress those who are there, keep them there. And, you know, whether they realize it or not, there are so many slaves. They are slaves. People that are at the fast food restaurant, for us to do them like that and to pay no mind to those who are minimum wage, it's like we are just harvesting slaves. Wow. Giving them slave hours, working them like slaves. We just have slaves everywhere. They're just glorified. And we expect them to do great performance. We expect them to do a perfect job. We expect them to give us our food fast.
We expect the cleaner to clean it immaculately, get those corners straight. But then if you ask for a pay raise, what are you talking about? Do your job. Get it done. Fast. Right. No exceptions to the rule. Meanwhile, the people who make way over minimum wage, they flaunt it. They can go and come how they want. Have more freedom at the office. Sometimes less stress, sometimes more stress. But it's definitely, they are able to go home and be comfortable in many cases. Whereas these who have slaved, who are slaving, their whole life is a slave. They can't take care of their families. They go and work all day and they still come home and look at children that are hungry. A man is embarrassed with his wife. Can't have a family, can't keep the families together because the husband and wife, they're fighting because only one can afford to work because they can't afford a babysitter. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely correct. Mr. Elias, sounds, I think we have a phone call. Who do we have on the line, sir?
We have our colleague, Rich Sister, on the line with us, Jay.
Hey, what's going on, Rich Sister? Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How's everyone else doing?
Doing great.
Good morning.
What's your comments on this particular topic, ma'am?
Well, definitely, they definitely deserve to be paid more. So many that are classified as, they say, the working poor. And
right.
it's just a shame when you're barely struggling. You got people living on the streets with jobs. I mean,
yeah.
they're working these 9-to-5, but they're living on the street. And that just simply shouldn't be. Anybody with any kind of job should be making enough to live off of. Period, bottom line. And as the cost of living increases, you know, wages should increase. You know, your cost of living going up, but you're still making the $7, $8 an hour. That's not going to work. Just bottom line.
No, I agree with you. I think that, you know, you said something that that really resonated with me, the fact that you do have people who are actually out here working these jobs, and they go to homeless shelters when they're done. I mean, how can you be the working poor? You know, there's no excuse for a life of crime. Don't get me wrong about that. But, you know, if you're not going to give people an opportunity with what skill sets that they have, then, you know, I guess I don't understand, where do you want them to go? Now, you know, everybody makes mistakes. There are people out there who will never be Rhodes Scholars, and that's just the way it is. But the bottom line is, if people are trying to make an honest living, I think you give them the opportunity to do that. I just don't understand why you won't. It's 21 minutes after the hour. You're listening to The Serious Side of the Jay Rouse Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Our phone number is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. You can climb in. Just a programming note, I have changed the episode information, so the link that you may be trying to get into the show may not work, so you're going to have to probably just hit reset and come back in. I'm sorry for the inconvenience. It's just that we can't update the information on the show until after the show starts, unfortunately. Hopefully we can get that worked out here in the next couple of months. But until then, you're going to have to press an extra button or two to tune in to The Serious Side. We're talking about minimum wage. Now, Mr. Elias, in the short period of time that we have left, why is it significant for these people to have union representation?
Well, you know something, man, because with the union representation, man, you got somebody to actually back you, that you sign a contract with, and then they enforce the contract. If you got a good union, now all unions aren't great. I'm not going to sit here and say they're great, but a union, a good union, if you got a good union behind you, man, look, they got lawyers on staff. They got people that'll fight for you. You got anything that you need at your disposal, man. And you got a contract that these people have to abide by. That's why most employers are scared of unions, man, because you have a contract and a wage where you know what everybody's making. Everybody in the place knows what you're making, and you can't sneak and pay this person this much and this person that much. Everybody in the place makes the same thing. So you know what you're making. And you're going to get a fair wage, and you're going to get treated the same way. You're not going to get treated like Walmart treats people, where they got people working overtime, and they won't pay them overtime wages. You know, this is all part of a union. To me, it's one of the best things that ever happened to America is a union.
Now, there are some people who say that the union, in some cases, are detrimental because of, you know, the situation where the union requires people to have pensions at a certain rate, and, you know, if there's money, you know, running out and things of that nature, that sometimes the unions can be very hard to deal with. And how do you respond to those critics?
You know, those are just those people, man. They're critics for a reason, man. Look, I've been in the union going on 20-some years, man. My pension is phenomenal. And, you know, my pension is controlled by the government. If my pension drops below a certain point, the government
yeah.
comes in and takes it over and kicks the union out. And that's the point. You know, the bottom line is, you know, if you sign a contract with somebody and you agree to pay them what they're supposed to be paid, you better be damn sure be ready to pay their pension. You better be damn sure to pay the pension.
Well, all right. Let me get final thoughts on this particular topic. Let me start with you. Looks like, let me see who we have here. Is this Jerome? Jerome, good morning. Is this you?
Yes, sir. How you doing, guys?
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Glad that you're in the house.
We're
about to close
good morning,
out this
Jerome.
Topic, but I definitely want to hear from the smartest man in the world. What are your thoughts on this whole thing with fast food people? The global walkout, and just give me your give me a little bit of information on that, sir. What's on your mind right now?
Well, they should do it, and it's kind of like, you know, what Occupy Wall Street did generally, and everybody knows that the wage gap between, you know, the wealthy has increased. I don't know how many programs address this, and everyone acts like, you know, they can ignore the obvious, but again, we've had precedent of what happens when you have a society when you keep spreading wealth like that. And what happens is that, you know, again, France celebrates Bastille Day, and that's when they stormed the Bastille. You can't
right.
starve people out and then expect them to cut your grass without looking at you like your lunch. Right? It's not going to happen. It eventually turns on you. I mean, we could talk about the effects of slavery, and why Martha Washington wouldn't even, she had, I think, about 185 slaves when after George Washington died, and a horrible flaw, but a flaw in his will said that when she dies, his slaves go free. Well, of course, she pretty much went into hiding, because you have 185 slaves, somebody might kill you to free everybody else. So, you know, what happens, you talk about wages and people starving and having gaps like that, there is no fairness when you can't make a decent wage and then when you're watching someone make money off your labor. You know, back in Henry Ford days, it was always about partnership, you know, and everyone talks about him like he's a great entrepreneur and a great capitalist, but Henry Ford said it doesn't make any sense if the people making the cars can't afford to drive them.
He good
had a
point.
Lot of compassion for his workers.
That's a good point. That's an outstanding point when you say that. And we talked about it earlier, Jerome, why the Republicans are so against this and the fact that, you know, more wages equal more money into the economy. I guess I'm just not following why that's an issue and that, you know, some of the richest people in our country, they all belong to one family. And yet still, we still having issues with trying to pay people money. Your thoughts.
Yeah, and you know the irony of the Walmart folks is they sell cheap products and don't want to pay anybody and make all the money, right? So the funny thing about them is they are poster children on what not to do. They really believe that everybody is endowed to people who have money. So they give you cheap products and all of that stuff, and then don't pay their workers, and then tell their workers, hey, go on a government program, and then fund places to cut down government programs. Again, the steal day to the Walmart family. Right?
Well, you know what, when you think about that, you're right, they sell stuff cheap, so people who don't make a lot of money can buy the stuff, But then they're against, you know, their own people make it. It's you know what, man? Wow. That just turned the light on in my head when you said that. I'm like, are you serious? I mean, isn't that calling the kettle black?
Yeah, think of how crazy that is. Like, you really, really have to be. It's like when Republicans say things like there's makers and there's takers. That is crazy beyond belief. If you pull back from a very, like, human societal way, for somebody to say that we're not all cooperative or having a shared experience in living, that means that as an individual, I need to go, you know, drill oil, put gas in a car that I need to build so I can go to the store and get something to eat for food that I cook. We don't do all of those things, so we have to make sure society has enough so that everybody succeeds, so that we all can have shared services. But a maker and taker thing is like saying, all of you fools just need to shine my shoes. And I quote Elvis on that one.
Absolutely. All right, real quick, before we close the set out, just received a note from a guy by the name of Michael. Thank you, Michael, with this information. He's saying that if you want to get into the show, if you first go to the show page, if you click the link, it will bring you back to the show page. But once you click the link, it will also refresh and put the new link out there. So if you're on BTR trying to access the show, he's saying that the original title, which says The Serious Side of the J. Rouse Show, if you click on that, it's going to refresh the page. And then when the page is refreshed, then the new link will appear with the title of today's show. So thank you, Michael, for that information. And so you can definitely do that. If you're listening from other places, the updated link is out there, so all you have to do is just go ahead and hit that link, and it should bring you right on in, or have you listen from wherever you desire to listen from. It's a great day around here. On a beautiful Sunday, it's The Serious Side of the J. Rouse Show, once again, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Speaking of Michaels, beautiful segue into our next topic, Michael Sam.
You are listening to
this guy. Oh, that's the wrong one. I'm sorry about that. This guy continues to stir controversy. This young man has signed up to do business with Oprah. We're going to talk about that on the other side. Should he concentrate on football, or should he just get his money-making skills on? You're listening to The Serious Side of the J. Rouse Show. We'll be right back after this. Don't go nowhere.
This is your resident map of the South, Moms and Little Donnas, kickstarting your weekend every Friday with Ladies First Radio, The J. Rouse Show, a show for women, by women. Tune in every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as my co-host, Princess Odelia, and I discuss everyday issues and offer inspirational solutions. From the East Coast to the West Coast to all over the world, Ladies First Radio keeps it real, spreading positivity one show at a time. So come be uplifted with Ladies First Radio, The J. Rouse Show. Every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Ladies First Radio, The J. Rouse Show. A show for women, by women.
Hi, I'm Venus Williams. You know, I heard recently that the two main reasons for not getting an annual mammogram are limited access and fear. I know that there are low-cost and even free screenings at some hospitals and clinics, and I've even heard of mobile mammogram units in some areas. Talk about service. Look, I know getting a screening is not as exciting as shopping, but life is for living. So take the first step to breast health. Get the mammogram. For more information, please visit breastcancerawareness.com.
chose to stay. Trying hard to make amends. What more can I say?
A couple of months of negotiations, the Oprah Winfrey Network announced yesterday that they had purchased the rights to a 6-to-8-part documentary series that will follow the life of Michael Sam, the 249th pick of the draft by the St. Louis Rams, who is poised to be the first openly gay player in league history. If he sticks, the working title for the series is, quote, The Untitled Michael Sam Project. Said Sam, if seeing my story helps somebody else accept who they are and to go for their dreams too, that's great, close quote.
Welcome back. It's 37 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Serious Side of the J. Rouse Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Phone number is 347-850-1272. Let's say good morning to everyone once again. Let's say good morning to the very lovely Dr. Princess Adia. Good morning. How are you?
I am doing very well. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning to the smartest man in the world, Jerome Esprit. Good morning, Jerome. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you?
And of course, Mr. Elias is always in the house. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Jerome, and good morning, Dr. Adia.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And she's sitting in with us this morning. I'm not sure for how long, but we always welcome family members in the house. Rich Sister is here. Good morning. How are you, Rich Sister?
I'm doing well. How's everyone else doing?
Hopefully everyone's doing well.
Say well.
Hello
well.
To all of our guests who are listening to us this morning as well, all our listeners. And it looks like people are figuring out the way to get in. Thank you, Michael, for that information as we try to continue to improve the show. You heard the lead-in. We talked about Michael Sams. Michael Sam, he is the first openly gay NFL player who was drafted by the NFL, I should say, was drafted by the St. Louis Rams. And the first thing he did was, well, after he kissed his boyfriend on national television and caused everyone to feel uncomfortable, he decided to do something with Oprah Winfrey. And so people are saying, wait a minute now, young man, slow your roll. So now, for those who are familiar big sports guys. ESPN has a show called Numbers Don't Lie. Michael Smith is one of the hosts on that show, and he had something to say about Michael Sam. Here's the clip, and we'll talk on the other side.
Following a couple of months of negotiations, the Oprah Winfrey Network announced yesterday that they had purchased the rights to a 6-to-8-part documentary series that will follow the life of Michael Sam, the 249th pick of the draft by the St. Louis Rams, who is poised to be the first openly gay player in league history. If he sticks, the working title for the series is, quote, The Untitled Michael Sam Project. Said Sam, if seeing my story helps somebody else accept who they are and to go for their dreams too, that's great, close quote. And I get that. But I'm uncomfortable with this. I have a serious issue with this. Because I'm confused. When is he Michael Sam, the football player? And when is he Michael Sam, the openly gay football player? Because you have already made headlines in history. Now make the team. Now is not the time to be making documentaries. I'm all for, once you make the team and exceed success and be great as you were determined to be, I'm all for books, movies, speaking engagements, and everything. But you're a 7th-round pick. Okay? We just had Ray Farmer, the general manager of the Browns, on yesterday talking about how the only thing Johnny Manziel has done in the NFL is get drafted and that they want him to act like a backup. You're a 7th-round pick. I understand the historical significance, but the best thing he can do for the LGBT cause, okay, is to make the team and make a contribution, not make a documentary right now. He needs to be focused only on football and have others only focused on him as a football player. You can't say, don't ask me about my sexuality. I just want to be looked at as a football player and then sign up to do a documentary on the OWN Network.
Interesting commentary by Michael Smith, once again, courtesy of ESPN's show, Numbers Don't Lie. Let me start off with you, Mr. Elias, on this one. What are your thoughts on that, man? Do you agree with him? Do you think that this guy should really concentrate on making the team versus trying to get out here and have, you know, have a social message out there? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, I agree. I think you should concentrate on making a team, you know, first. And then, you know, like you said, get all your documents there. Because, you know, something, you're not guaranteed a spot on any team. Even though he went, from what I understand, he was a great player, you know.
Yeah.
And he went that low in the draft tells me people were scared of the circus. They were scared. I mean, look, they should have judged this man on his football ability. If he was that good of a player, they should have just judged him on that. But if he wasn't, I mean, he went right. But I gotta agree with him. He needs to concentrate on making a team first, you know, and then punishing everybody who, like he said, all those teams that bypassed him. He needs to punish them for bypassing them because of his sexuality. If he's that great of a player, then let him be that great of a player.
Well, wait a minute now. Hold on now. Let me press you on something here. Now, all the draft people had this guy, Mr. Elias, you know, tapping out at, you know, no one had him going in the first two or even three rounds. So do you think the reason why he fell, dropped so low, is not based on their assessment of his abilities, but the fact that he was gay, that he is gay, I should say?
From what I understand, he was a great college football player. He was great.
But he didn't grade out. Hi, Mr. Elias. It says
okay,
some of his
Johnny
numbers
Manziel.
Were inflated.
Okay. What about Johnny Manziel?
Well, I mean, come on. I mean.
Well, right. Okay. Okay. You understand what I'm saying? Johnny Manziel, come on. Man, if he was rated that high, didn't he win defensive player of the year in college?
He was co-defensive player for a year for his conference, which people said don't really have NFL talent over there. But listen, look, I'm with you. I don't know if he should have been a 7th-round draft pick, but a lot of people said that, you know, based on their grade and, you know, he had 13.5 sacks. 9 of those sacks were within 3 games against lesser competition. They also talked about the fact that he really didn't do well at his pro day. I mean, at the combine. I mean, but here, I hear what you're saying. I mean, point taken. I don't want to belabor this and turn this into a sports show, but I definitely want us to focus on the topic at hand. Let me slide down to you, Jerome, on this. So, you know, Michael Smith, once again, the guy from ESPN is saying, look, if you want to do good for the community that you represent, then you need to make the team. Your voice is bigger if you have a platform. And the comparisons are being made from him to Tim Tebow. People are saying, look, Tim Tebow, people would follow Tim Tebow, but he needs football. Now that Tim Tebow is not into football, Tim Tebow's popularity is just not where it was because really he doesn't have a stage or a platform, right, to express some of his needs, express some of the things that he represents. What say you in regards to this whole thing with Michael Sam?
I don't know what to say about it, actually. I mean, it's just, the only thing I can just generally say is, I can't say what somebody should do personally or if they should do their own show or not. I don't know that. But I think that the focus, I think the focus is bad, right? And so whenever you do anything, you have to focus on one or the other. So you can talk about, it's like talking about entertainment, like the Kardashians, for example. I never have anything to say about them because there's nothing to say. Like, they're not in entertainment. They're not in music. They are a reality show, which is vague, and you don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't have anything to say specifically on what somebody should or should not do. I have to know a specific question, but I guess I never thought about it. Even as I saw the stories, haven't paid enough attention to it to have a real opinion on, you know, if he should do a reality show or not or whatever. I mean, I'm not a football fan to that degree to tell you how football player conduct should be. It's like saying what a basketball player's conduct should be. I don't know.
Well, we know you're not a football fan based on your picks earlier this year. We definitely understand that.
As I won them all, you figure I would just throw them in a big bowl and just pick them out, right?
No, I mean, I get your point. I definitely get your point. And you're right. When you look at what this guy is trying to do, he's looking at this as an inspiration. One of the things that bothers me, and we're going to get out to the phone lines, Missouri, we see you. We're coming to you next. One of the things that bothers me about this is how every time, something like this makes the news, Dr. Princess Aldea, people want to compare the plight of the gay to the plight of the African-American. And, it just chaps my ass every time because, to me, there's no comparison. But yet and still, we want to use this as a comparison. I heard people refer to this guy as almost like he's Gandhi. He's like Martin Luther King. He's like, he's like this, he's like that. No, he's not. He's like Jackie Robinson. No, he's not. And it bothers me when I hear that. So what are your comments? And then, Missouri, we're coming to you right after this. Your thoughts on what I just said.
Okay. I am going to say this. Now, you know where I'm going to go.
I don't care.
Okay. Very good. I stand firm by anybody's journey, their life, whatever they're on their journey for, to their fulfillment, their life's true purpose. Okay, I don't subscribe to whatever people think about what this man should do, whether it's right or wrong. It's only an opinion, and it doesn't matter. And I really hope that he will stay his course, whatever that may be. And our course, our life's journey, is nobody's business but our own. Okay, that's what's going to make him happy. Whatever is the fulfillment of his own happiness, my hat goes off to him.
Okay.
If for all we know, okay, we're looking at the physical, what interests us. We're looking at he's a football player and he's going against the grain. He's not doing what we normally do. He's going against tradition. Definitely something we never expected. And those are the beauties of life. So, however he comes to the fulfillment of his own happiness, then let it be so. If he's going to do well in football, so long as he stays the course of his own, to his own truth and happiness, he will be the baddest football player, and he'll do what he has to do in time and season for his own life. So we can talk about it. It doesn't matter. And what should matter, and I'm glad that he's doing what he wants to do. Be happy.
Do what makes you happy and use wisdom in that. And unfortunately, that journey is usually one that you take alone. It's usually one that nobody likes. People don't understand. And if he's worried about that, he can live his life unhappy and unsure. So my hat goes off to him for following his dream, period.
All right, well said.
I would like to comment.
Hold on for a second, Rich. So let's get the comment. Let's get the phone call here, and I'll let you have the floor afterwards. Mr. Elias, who do we have on the line, sir?
We got Pianchi from the St. Louis area, Jay.
Good morning, Pianchi. Welcome to the Serious Side. What's your comment?
Hey, Jay, you know, I really was going to comment on the minimum wage.
Well, go ahead.
But since you're on Michael Sam, and I'm going to come from this two ways. First, I want to throw a cheap shot.
Okay.
Black women complain about white women taking their men, but now you got white men doing the same thing. Now what's your complaint? Second thing.
Good point.
I didn't want to see him kissing his mate on TV. It seemed like we were bum rushed with this. And I don't want my children. People don't want their children seeing that and licking cake. People don't want their children to see this. So where is, you know, even if it was a man and a woman, I mean, do you kiss your wife out in public and lick cake off her face like that? No. So I think that there should be some sort of decency brought to the public, whereas children have, you know, if I was given the chance to put my fingers over, my hands over my children's eyes, I probably wouldn't have been quite as kind of upset as I am now. But I think that something, you don't want to see hugging, licking, and grouping on the TV where your children have to watch this. They're children. Another point, you know, on the thing on minimum wage. You know, minimum wage, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, going back to 2007 when it was $5.15 an hour, it shows a chart that the higher the minimum wage goes, the higher teenage unemployment goes, and especially for black teens. Especially for black teens. It got up as high as 50% in the latter part of the year 2009 when the minimum wage approached $7.25 an hour. So no one looks at that. It's something to consider.
Interesting. That's good. You know, those are good comments. You know, thank you so much, man, for calling in and listening to the series.
And I will continue.
You know, oh, I'm sorry about that. Go ahead. Finish your – what did you say? I'm sorry.
I said I will continue. I'm going to continue to listen to your show. It's very, very professional.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate the comments. We appreciate the comments. Thank you so much. It's 10 before the hour. You're listening to the Serious Side of the Jay Rouse Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Our call in number is 347-850-1272. Now, he brought up a good point, and I definitely want us to talk about this a little bit. You know, going a little bit back to the minimum wage, he did make a very good point about, you know, teenage unemployment, and it's like, okay, if you have these grown people taking these teenage jobs that are originally meant for teenagers, then what happened to the black youth? I mean, that's interesting. Maybe we'll talk about that on another show. Let's talk about the comments he made. Go ahead, Jerome. Sounds like you have something to say.
Yeah, I'll comment on that really, really quickly and talk about the Michael Sam thing. But
and then we're coming to you next, Rich Sister. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I want to say this. You have to take a lot of things into consideration when you talk about minimum wage. I mean, there's 73% support across the board for minimum wage, but the reason that scale goes up and down as far as employment is concerned is because rich folks figured out a way to devalue their workers, right? If you look at corporate profits at the same time that the minimum wage have been staggering when you have unemployment, you check the bumps in those statistics and you'll find that either the economy was bad, so they won't stop the CEO compensation. They'll lay off, you know, 400 people. And if you look at it from that perspective, it does really, really look different because they don't like to give up their own severance because you can write it off against your profits for the year. So they give the CEOs this severance, lay off the workers, and then they balance out their books so they don't, so they minimize their taxes. So it is a game of shuffling your profits. And if you look during that same time, the amount of offshore accounts for corporations had gone up too. I mean, American Airlines tried to bankrupt their workers by moving their accounts offline until, I think it was Eric Holder, threatened them. He said, if you can't file bankruptcy and keep that money overseas, we're going to come get that. They were going to freeze their assets.
Their pensions and everything else, yeah, I remember that.
They were going to bankrupt their pensions of the workers, and they had billions overseas, and they took it out of the pensions of workers, and they invested overseas, and then they wanted to break them. I mean, Hostess did the same thing.
I remember that as well. You're right. I mean,
so
it's
the same
it's thing. Go ahead, Jerome.
Yeah, it's just the same thing, and I wanted to say that as well as, you know, I agree with the caller on the Michael Sam stuff. I didn't want to go into that too much, but that is not – there is something about sensationalizing that, which is crazy because they don't ever show, you know, people getting picked for the drafts, kissing their girlfriends and take and all that. There's something kind of a little bit more off about that. So I
– yeah. And I'll say this, in this, Rich Sister, I definitely want to give you an opportunity to comment. I'll say this, that you do see, you know, and I'll watch the draft every year. You do see them stand up and give their girlfriend maybe a little kiss on the cheek or whatever, or a little kiss on a little peck. But it's nothing like, you know, the Al and Tipper Gore scene, you know, election, you know, doing that whole thing. So you don't see that. You don't see the cake in the face. You know, some people thought that that was really inappropriate, and I agree with that. Rich Sister, what's your comment? I'm sorry we're coming to you so late. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. My whole issue is I do agree with the comment that you played before about focus on football. And what I wanted to say, too, is like on one hand, they're like, okay, I want to openly announce that I'm gay and I can understand why they want to do that. But then you take every and then you say you want to be treated like everyone else. But then you take every opportunity possible to say that you're gay, where that's not necessarily needed. Do you understand what they take every opportunity? You know, I don't create hashtags saying straight girl. Because and I may not have to do that for the obvious reason, but I mean, taking every opportunity when you say you want to be accepted like every, I don't know if my point being made clear. It's just,
I think I understand what you're trying to say. I mean, you're right. I think what you're trying to say is that let's not be so flamboyant, but let's not flaunt it. You want to be treated like everyone else, but then you want to wear the fact that you're gay as a badge of honor, so to speak. And
Yes, exactly. It's like if you want to be treated like everybody else, okay, I heard you were gay the first time. Now go out and play football, because in the end, that's about your personal business anyway. So
yeah,
football now.
Yeah, let me say this, because here's where, and I don't like comparing this plight to the African American plight, but here's what I will say: there are some similarities. I mean, we say the same thing. We say that, you know, treat me as one. And we talked about this last week with affirmative action. And I know some people may get upset behind this comment, but we say things like, okay, treat us as equal, but at the same time, you know, we need to have special things in place to acknowledge the fact that we've been, you know, segregated against all these years. I guess where I'm going with this is this.
Are you kidding me?
Hold on. Let me finish. I knew you were going to step up. Let me finish. What I'm saying is that, first of all, when it comes to affirmative action, and we talked about this last week, you know, the bottom line is based on this nation's history, there is a reason for it to be in place, and it should never go away. I don't give a damn what white people may say about that, okay? I don't care about that. But when it comes to when you're talking about the gay athlete, are you talking about gay people in general, you know, I guess I don't have a problem with them taking the opportunity to let the world know about the struggles that they're going through. But the problem that I do have with them is don't try to compare your struggle to what we've gone through. Because it was okay for crowds of white people to hang us back in the 60s, 50s, and 60s, and they took parts of our bodies for souvenirs. It was okay for us. Back in the day, there were different fountains. We couldn't drink at certain fountains because of our skin color. Okay, there had to be legislation passed in order for us to even vote. So you can't say, you cannot compare your plight to our plight.
And so stop doing it. It's not even a comparison. And that's what chaps my ass about that. You can't, it's not even in the, listen, you can say that, well, you know, well, they track gay people down and beat them up. You have incidents where people are beaten because of their sexual orientation. We're talking about mobs of people hanging African Americans from trees, taking pictures while the cops are standing in the background. That's never happened to gay people. There's no fountain that says only gay drink here. So don't even do it. And I know all our gay listeners are going to be pissed off, but I'm sorry. The truth is the truth. There's no comparison. I'm done. Floor is all,
Jay,
whoever wants it next.
Jay, may I please speak? Do you hear me?
Floor,
can you hear
go
me?
Ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't know. Okay, first, this is what I want to say. You're not being hung right now, okay?
Some of us are being dragged behind cars, though.
Yeah, and guess what? Gays are too, all right? I think we have a tendency, I'm just going to say this. I mean, everybody has a
struggle.
You
get ready,
you know,
too.
I don't
get ready.
Okay, listen.
It's coming.
I am getting ready. I don't think, I'm already ready. Let me tell you. We as black people, we still all the time we're reminding everybody what we've been through. Don't really could care less publicly about anybody else's struggle. When all we say that ours is worse than everybody, as a people, that's how our actions show. We've got Jews who've been through their thing or whatever. Okay, we have other people that they've gone through slavery too. Okay, now they. I know gay people who can't go in certain places, who are constantly looked at bad, who are scared of their lives, who take fighting classes and things like that because they are scared of the dangers that they face, that they live every day. Now, listen, your struggle is your struggle. They have a struggle, too. Let's not be
we're not saying that.
Okay, but you always have to listen. We are out. People look at us and say, I see you, black. You don't have to keep telling us that you're black. I don't know why you got to be just like the guy from the Clippers who said, just don't bring the black people with you here. Don't let me see them with you. Okay, so then we say, I don't want to see you kissing your man. I admit it's a little harsh. You know,
I don't.
I respect the responses that people had. They said it was a little harsh, him kissing his boyfriend in front of everybody or whatever, because that's not what we're accustomed to. That's not our tradition. That's not what many people like to see. But it also goes right to the truth that we're still prejudiced. We're prejudiced against them. He's being martyred right now because he kissed a man. If he would have kissed a woman, you wouldn't have had a problem with it. He could have kissed that woman.
Yes, I would have.
It would have been okay. You're right. And guess what? 40, 50 years ago, if he would have done that, if he would have kissed his woman, that would have been too much. But today, we accept it because today, times have changed, you know, and hey, you can kiss, hell, you can kiss, make love, say all kind of words on TV and everything that weren't good back then, but now it is. So
all right, Dr. Frisco, let Jerome say, because we're running out of time on the set. Go ahead, Jerome.
Oh, man, I don't even know where to begin with this. This is where we talk about black-on-black crime. There's a reason why black folks during movements fight and fall out, and we can't get from point A to point B to C to D because of that type of thinking. What happens is that it is always inherent on us to take other people's plight ahead of yours, and we do that voluntarily, but there are people who are agitators, right? When we talk about affirmative action and we start comparing it to other things, like they're really comparable to what oppression and racism is, right? Because being prejudiced, everybody has their bias and they can be prejudiced. Racism, if you want to talk about Donald Sterling, I am horrified that people keep saying stuff like, I cannot believe in the year 2000, whatever. That is horrifying to me. That's a bad, scary movie. Because if you don't know what racism is, you don't get it. And so what happens is that you talk about economic oppression, segregation. We looked at, we're celebrating the 60th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education, and our schools are more segregated now. And you know why? Because during the 80s, during Reagan and all of those, they started desegregating schools, and the individual states started letting schools, you know, they stopped busing and all those other things because we said, hey, we're free to go where we want, and you can hang around white folks or black folks because we're open society. That is bull. The reason that we don't move forward is because we can't stick to jack for any long period of time because there's somebody who comes out who aggravates the situation by saying, we need to move on, and it's not about being black or white. We need to just be us. And you cannot do that and have any kind of progression because our youth are suffering based upon the adults now being oppressed so much in the job market that they're taking youth jobs. And now the youth are not going to have any jobs for a while because they can't get a living wage for the adults.
That's a good point.
Okay, please, Matt, one more quick comment.
I wasn't commenting on you.
About me, but I was racist. This, I wasn't being racist. She was, but that's still the same thing.
Okay, I'm not who sure that is. Let's get that mic. Okay, real quick, Dr.
Okay,
Prisoner,
we
have to go. Make it real fast. We have to go. We're running late.
I'm just going to say this, that it's important for us to appreciate and to respect other people's struggle as well. It's not always just about our struggle and our history of oppression. Other people live the same experience in a different way. Who are we to judge their pain? Who are we to judge their pain or to discredit it?
Well, okay. I'll say this. Yeah, go ahead, Jerome. Hurry, because we're behind. Go ahead. Matter of fact, you have the final thought, the final comment on this set. Go ahead.
Okay, really quickly. Nobody's discrediting anybody's pain. That's not what happened. We're just saying that we need to stay focused on what we need to stay focused on, and then change the subject when we try to change the subject. But don't mix every subject into the same subject every time there's something happens. We have ADD. That's all I was saying. Nobody is dismissing anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you can hear, you know, people hear it differently, but that was just my point, is that we have to focus. Just like you said, Jay, nothing is comparable to the oppression of black people in this country. Nothing.
Well said, my man, Jerome. All right, folks, we'll be back after this.
This is a test.
As we jump into the second set with laughter, a hearty laughter from Toxic Style. Welcome back in, folks. 347-850-1272.
It's still for women, by women. Is your resident map of the South, Mom Little Donna.
Good Sunday morning to you, folks, and welcome into the serious side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Cafe.
Welcome back. You are tuning in to the True Purpose Development Show. Tonight, we...
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
Robert Copeland, the police chief in the town of Wolfboro, New Hampshire, used the N-word when describing President Obama. Residents in the village of 6,000 people and beyond immediately started calling for his resignation. Copeland has refused to apologize for his remark.
Your place for smooth jazz on Sunday mornings. That was the sound. Listen to my heart. I tell you, it's a beautiful song. Welcome back in, 347-850-1272. It's 12 minutes after the hour. You're listening to this side of the J. Ryle Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Let's say good morning once again to our panel. Let's say good morning to the very lovely Dr. Princess Aldea. Good morning. How are you?
I am doing absolutely awesome. Good morning, everyone.
Of course, the smartest man in the world, Jerome Esprit. What's going on, my man? How are you?
Hey, what's going on, people? How bad?
I'm a man who gets the first and last word here on the serious side, the one and only Mr. L.E.S. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing this morning?
And good morning to Rich Sister for hanging out with us. Good morning, Rich Sister.
Good morning.
And it looks like our colleague Vanessa has checked in this morning. Good morning, Vanessa. How are you? Maybe she didn't check in. Maybe she's getting ready for church. I want to say good morning to everyone that's listening to the show that can hear the sounds of our voices. Once again, we thank you so much for your support. You heard the lead-in. If you haven't heard the story about this guy, here's a clip, and we'll talk on the other side.
Robert Copeland, the police chief in the town of Wolfboro, New Hampshire, used the N-word when describing President Obama. Residents in the village of 6,000 people and beyond immediately started calling for his resignation. Copeland has refused to apologize for his remark. Jane O'Toole, a resident of the town, overheard the 82-year-old make the comment in a restaurant in March. In an email to other police, the elected official said, "I believe I did use the N-word in reference to the current occupant of the White House. For this, I do not apologize. He meets and exceeds my criteria for such." There are approximately 20 African Americans in Wolfboro and no minorities among the 12 full-time officers who make up the police force there. At a recent meeting of the police commission, around 20 people called for his resignation and two spoke in defense of Copeland. The police chief said, quote, "My use of derogatory slang in reference to those among minorities undeserving of respect is no secret." Copeland ran unopposed for re-election in March and is due to manage the police forces there for three more years.
Well, you know, what can you say about this particular story? Let me start this thing off with you, Mr. Elias. I mean, I don't know. You know, it just seems to me every week we're talking about some idiot out there with a stupid-ass comment about the president. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, we're going to continue to talk about this. Like I said last week, you know, when we were talking about the fact of getting rid of the act that we were talking about getting rid of, I can't remember, it escapes me right now. But the bottom line is, you know, there's always going to be racists and there's always going to be idiots out there. And these people are going to come out of the woodworks, and they keep coming out of the woodworks every week, man. There's nothing new. You know, racism hasn't gone anywhere. It still exists. And, you know, this guy is just a complete idiot to come out and say something like that. You know, but what can we say? It's a freedom of speech, so you should have your freedom of speech, but the bottom line is, you know, to come out and say something like that, and you're in a predicament as a police chief, your ass should be gone. He should be out of office. He should be gone. If you got that kind of racist views, you should be gone. There's no way you should be a public official having these kind of views. Because that means you don't hire African Americans, you don't hire any people of color. You just got a racist view, and you're a complete idiot. Well, Jerome, I'm gonna come to you because I think Jay had to step out for a minute. Jerome, what's your thoughts on this?
Hey, you know, I agree with you on this because if your police chief don't respect authority, like, what do you have to say about that?
Right? Really?
Of course, the president is the president of the country, which gives him authority federal, which has authority over state, which has authority over your city, local, state, and county. I mean, your local government. and he can't respect authority, but he's in a military organization. That's problematic, right? So when we talk about systemic racism, and I've talked about that today pretty much, when I talk about comparing how people view black people, that is the problem. Because you can't listen to another word that man says. You can't listen to a word he says if he arrests somebody. You can't. If that's how he feels, we have to be really careful on what we accept as black folks, because those people hide in plain sight to all of us.
Exactly.
He just feels like he has the nerve to say it. So being that he said it, we should all kind of look at that as a blessing to say, stop acting like Donald Sterling is a wake-up call and this dude is a wake-up call. Understand that is a problem.
Yes.
That is a problem in somebody else's community, not necessarily yours, that they need to deal with.
I agree wholeheartedly, man. I mean, for this guy to come out, you know, to be a police chief, and he's supposed to be over, you know, his whole force, and he has these racist views, and he said he's not going to step down in hell. They should fire his ass. They should get rid
right.
of him. The bottom line is, why is this guy talking about, I'm not going to step down? You shouldn't step down. You're fired. Now get out. You know, because as a taxpayer, I'm paying your damn salary. So you don't like me. You want to call me all these derogatory names, and you should leave. I just don't get this. I don't. That's just plain and utterly ridiculous to me.
And you know who should fire him? The mayor, whoever the mayor is, or the
yes.
governor, or whoever, and their state people. Because what happens is you cannot enforce laws and apply them based upon your prejudice, right? And so he's not an effective leader if that's how he's saying, I feel that about him. But technically, if he feels that about him, how do you feel about all black people as a whole? Now, he's going to lie, but the truth is that you can't, that's not our job to actually figure out which one is that he's going to be happy with. So somebody can step in and there's mechanisms for getting him fired. He doesn't have to voluntarily resign. People just don't like taking away folks' pension. You know, I'm sorry. They don't like to take away white folks' pension.
Right.
Because
that's
the trick of him having that discourse with the president, is that they will let him resign, where if it was me, I'd have got fired.
Exactly. Exactly. Rich, sister, you got anything you want to add to this?
Yes. Definitely in agreement with y'all about how he should be fired and all that stuff. But here we go in the situation again of private conversation. You know, it brings about, okay, what's private then? What's private? But it's so funny. Of course, the obvious issue is when the private conversations are made public. But it's just... But no question that he should be dismissed. I mean, if you're going to dismiss Donald Sterling with his comment, you know. But it really brings it to issue of, well, I guess the true answer is nothing is private anymore. Not with technology.
Dr. Prince Adair, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, your
and
comment.
I'm going to say this. It's something how all of the truths are just coming out. It's just so prevalent, and things are just, you know. I'm very glad that the racism is showing up, because usually that means there's getting ready to be some change, some transformation. When things start stirring up, it's stirring up for transition. So I'm glad that the blatant nature of racism and its still relevance today is being made known in a way where it cannot be denied. Because when you deny or ignore something, it leaves no option but for there not to be change. When you accept the truth of something that is tangible, that you can see,
and you accept it, acknowledge it, then it's there for you to be able to change, denounce, and do what's necessary to bring us to a new experience. So I'm glad that it's coming all out. It's going to keep coming out, too, because we are in transition as a people, as a world, and I'd like to maintain the hope and trust that we will definitely come to transformation in our view of all types of prejudice, and especially racism, whether you're black, whatever your race is, black, Chinese, Asian, or I should say black, Asian, you know, whatever culture you are. So I'm very happy about that. I'm happy about that, and it's just sad that he feels the way he feels. But, you know,
you're happy that it came out.
I have to extract something positive from this. And there's always, wherever there's negative, great negative, there's great positive, and vice versa, because it brings the balance. And in order for there to be change, you have to first see what you're trying to change. But we've been in denial. The world, you know, our country has been in denial. People actually fought. I mean, you know, there are people who actually thought that there was, that racism did not still exist, and would argue you to death about it. I have a lot of, you know, Caucasian friends and, you know, different friends, Indians, Asians. You know, I have a lot of different, a very diverse friend circle. And I've seen it. I mean, people really felt like there was no racism. And when I would even say it, they're like, come on. You know, that, I mean, this is, you know, that's so long ago. Let it go. But it's real. So now that it's showing up in the face of all of us, in a way that it cannot be denied. It's blatant, just how we've known it to be. It's blatant, and now they see it.
I can't agree with that, Doctor. It's never gone anywhere. Racism has always been prevalent.
I didn't say that it did. I never said that it did. I said that it's been there the whole time. I said it's been there the whole time. However, there's been a great mass of people who have been in denial or ignorant to its presence. You're not listening. I know it's never been gone. I'm a black woman. I understand that. I said that it has not been so blatant publicly as we've seen. Every other week we're hearing something from people that people thought they were for them. And I mean, it's wonderful that it's showing up in a way that it cannot be denied by the masses. It's clear. And that there offers the opportunity for change, transformation. Now we're on to something. Before we weren't as close as we are now. Now we can say, let's stand firm. We're closer now to change because it's up, out, and the blinders are off.
I got any change, Dr. D. I can't agree with that.
Yes, it
this
will.
Be,
don't be negative.
Really?
It will.
Oh,
yeah,
don't
okay,
be negative this time. Okay.
We're going through the process
of change
now. It's
been over 400 years of slavery.
We're going to change it
because it's been brought out? Really?
No, we're going through the process of change now. Trust and believe. The
oh,
process
my
of change.
God.
Oh, absolutely.
No,
God,
so
absolutely.
You for real?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we are.
We got Callie on the line. Callie, what are your comments, darling?
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, panel. Good morning,
Good
Dr. Cecilia.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr.
Good
Elliott.
Morning, Callie.
Good morning, Ms. Rich Sister. Did we lose J. Rall? Oh, good morning, if we did.
He's stopped out.
Okay. What everybody, I don't know if you caught it, because I listened to that his comments a couple of times, and he specifically said that he uses that word because he doesn't respect him. What African-American man does he respect? Okay,
right.
So that's, you should say, his exact words was, whatever you want to do, I don't respect him. That means he doesn't respect any African-American. So how can you be over a force where there are no African-Americans that work with him, but you're in a community that has African-Americans? He should lose his job because he called the president N-word. He should lose his job because he said he has no respect for black men, no black people at all. Because he doesn't respect black people. That's what he's saying. Okay? That's what he's saying. And so you can't be, not because he said against the president, he's saying he doesn't respect black people. So you can't have someone in public office who has to preside over a community that he has no respect for out the gate.
Okay, well, we got Bianchi calling back in, and he wanted to make a comment. So go ahead, Bianchi, your comments.
You know, on the commissioner, matter of fact, he did resign. But, yes, him in the capacity that he's in, he shouldn't be making mistakes like that. Someone mentioned the fact that he was sworn to uphold the Constitution and the Constitution of the state. And if he's upholding the Constitution, he has to uphold the chief executive of the country, which is the president. But if he's a private citizen, he has all the right in the world to make those comments. You know, we have to get away from this emotional responses to people's rights to make comments in the way they feel. You can, you know, prejudice and discriminations in some cases are good. Just look at the scholarships that's designated to specific ethnic groups, the Polish, the Vietnamese, black African Americans, Venezuelans. So, come on, let's think a little bit closer. The man, yes, you're right, he should be taken out of his position, being the fact that he's a public servant. He's elected, I think, and the city manager, the plea should have went to the city manager, then the mayor, then if you couldn't get anything out of those two, then the state representative of that area.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And,
so
you know,
said he resigned, he's not in power, he did resign, did you say that?
My understanding, he did resign. And we had a case like this in Springfield, Illinois, where another official dressed up as a clown in a rodeo with a bull and his head on a mask like Obama. And state of Missouri, Springfield Fair. And the representative, matter of fact, of my area, a senator, state senator, she led the way to have him removed. So in that case, yes, you're not supposed to do that when you hold those type of jobs.
I agree wholeheartedly. The bottom line is, you know, if you're a public official, you're paid by the people, then you know something, your opinion is your opinion, but you know, everybody's got their opinion, but you when you bring that out publicly, you need to go. You need to resign, and you know, and for what I understand, he said he wasn't going to step down, but hey, I haven't researched the story, and maybe he did step down.
Hey, Elias, I just want to say that the problem is, it's not just because he's black that he should resign. It is because it was the president. He's still currently president. So you can't pick and choose what you're enforcing. It sets a bad precedent. I spoke to police officers about this before, that when a policeman pressed up against this black kid, just generally, I forgot what he did, and I told him, when the law breaks the law, there is lawlessness. You're not allowed to break the law like that kid's not. So if you put your hands on him, you're breaking the law, just like you can't run red lights. The point is that you have, when you take a job that, like the military or whatever, and there's a chain of command, you have to abide by the rules of your employment or you're getting fired. Private citizen stuff is different. And I disagree with the Donald Sterling private information getting out, the L.A. Clipper owner, because he paid the highest fine for housing discrimination ever by the Justice Department or by Fair Housing folks. I think the Justice Department prosecutor. But that was his settlement. So he has a track record along with his private conversation. It's not just like he just said something about magic and we are getting mad. He's had a long track record, and you just can't.
A long history, yes.
Yeah. A long one. Go ahead.
You know, I agree with you, Jerome. Yeah, he's had a long history of it. I mean, he's Elgin. It goes back to Elgin Baylor. It goes back to housing discrimination. For him to sit there.
Elgin Baylor had what? The average salary at Elgin Baylor's position was $2.5 million. He paid him $600,000. It would not pay him anymore. He called one of his players' names while he was playing the game. Wow. Like that dude has a long history, and his wife does.
Yes.
And even though she's saying, hey, we should take over the team, we shouldn't be taken from our family, here is why, and I didn't mention this because I thought this would be a topic today, but there is kind of a death penalty for NBA owners. And what it is this. Like, everyone's talking about they can't make him sell his team and he owns it. Yes, you own your trademarks and you own anything that you're registered, and nobody can make you sell your business. That is true. But, just like the NCAA, no team has to schedule a game with the Clippers. So they may be playing the Globetrotters or joining the European League, but they don't have to. Seriously, he will have no value if he can't schedule a game. And they have by right to make schedules every year. And if the team players boycott or do not want to play against the Clippers' own team, they will do that. But the problem is when you sell a franchise, all of the other NBA owners split the profit. That's why they keep saying it's worth $1 billion. It's not worth that much money because they lost all the sponsorship. So
yes.
Just so that you know, there's a nuclear option in there, and it will break all of them. It will make the Clippers virtually worth zero money. They can send an expansion team in and not schedule them in the NBA.
Wow.
Let me ask a question on that. What do you do with the white-black backlash? And also, should they not make Magic give up his percentage of the Los Angeles Dodgers because his partner is the Grudenheims, who history goes back dealing with Loeb and Loeb, who insured slaves?
Well, you know, and I understand what you're saying, but that is still kind of reaching in comparison to this story, because we could do that with a lot of companies, right? And I can name them New York Life to a bunch of them, Tiffany's, all of those guys insured slaves. But here's the thing. What I'm saying is that instead of people being held hostage, we think as fans that people are not supporting the players and they're not supporting the team and the team colors. They're not supporting the Sterling family. That's why the Walmart people are going buck wild and don't listen to people, right? It's cheaper products. I'm probably going to go to Walmart later, you know, or Target or something. But the point is that you don't have the right to do anything in this country. You can do what you want, but nobody has to buy it. So just like Mercedes-Benz opted out and Virgin Airlines opted out of the sponsorship of the Clippers, everybody has the right to do that. And if they bring down the financial stability of the NBA as a league getting sponsorship, that's causing a hardship across the board for all the other owners. And in their bylaws, they can get him out for causing financial hardship.
Yeah, I agree with you that, but I agree with you on that. Now, you know what I think should have came out of this? I think that the players should leverage in order to have more black ownership of those NBA teams, not only NBA, but also the NFL and also hopefully Major League Baseball. If you have that, then you would have more black faces in behind the scenes, in the marketing, in the inner office, with sports medicine, with trainers, with the concessions, and so on and so on and so on, where you don't see that today.
You know, here's the problem with that, and I kind of agree with you, but here's the problem with it. The problem is that it's an old boys network, it's an old boys club,
yep.
And they're not letting anybody in because it's a private entity. It's kind of what they use to do that. So what happens is just like in Hollywood, they found out that with Eddie Murphy doing, Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder doing Stir Crazy, brought just as many black people to the movie theaters as having a black lead, and black exploitation films were gone. They wouldn't finance black films for a long, long time once Stir Crazy became successful. Then they started doing sidekicks, Will Smith and Independence Day, or Eddie Murphy. The Nick Nolte picture, 48 Hours, was Nick Nolte's movie. Eddie Murphy's early success was him sidekicking somebody else who was the main star. Once they figured that out, they said, hey, look at the NBA. You look at the All-Star game, you know, Shaq's up there popping and breaking and all this. And once it became a show, they just spun that entertainment industry. They're not going to let any black folks come in there to own them as long as you keep supporting the ones that are not owned by black people. And I'm not saying to boycott or not to boycott. I'm just, you know, just for the sake of conversation,
that there's a reason why people stay in power is because if you don't make a real jump towards something else, they won't give up power. You know, and I'll say this really quickly. It's like when the NBA strike ended. The strike didn't end because they had goodwill towards the players. The strike ended because LeBron James in Akron, in Ohio, I think he's going to do the game in Cleveland, Chris Paul, who was in New Orleans at the time, Dwayne Wade, all the major stars, Carmelo Anthony, they scheduled six games in arenas, and they were about to start playing games because their contracts were void because they were locked out. And as soon as they announced it, within a week later, they ended the lockout. It's because if you have six teams, you can start a league. And if they would have filled major arenas with just those black folks doing those games, NBA would be done. That's why that NBA lockout ended. Those guys scheduled games on their own.
You're
right about that, but I am telling you it's a little bit more not complex, but it's a little bit more devious than that, that they know better. I mean, there's a lot of precedent for that.
Yeah, you're right about that. Well, I'm back in here, 347-850-1272. We're talking about this whole thing with the New Hampshire commissioner, police commissioner. Michael Copeland made some comments. You guys heard the bit. Cashier or waitress heard what he said. She was offended. He didn't apologize. Looks like he did actually resign. But I guess my thing is, and this is something that I heard while I was on the move, you talked about, you know, this guy's having this conversation. It's a private conversation. And I think one of the callers called in today earlier and said, hey, you know, why are we so bent out of shape behind something that this guy made in, you know, in a private conversation? And I can't remember exactly where we went with that, but I was curious as to the response of that. I mean, this is a guy having a private conversation. I'm pretty sure all of us have said things in the private that if it came to light, people would be looking at us sideways. But I guess for me, and I guess I'll go to you with you on this, Dr. Princess Aldea, are we making a big deal out of something that we know exists in America? We know that there are people that are having these conversations amongst themselves. Is it a situation where we're just thankful to the fact that we know? Or is it because of the situation, because this guy is the police commissioner? He's in charge of a force of people who have weapons. The fact that if the president of the United States ever come to that area, which I doubt it, but he would be involved in the security detail. So is this more or less because of who he is versus what he said?
Well, she's not with us, Jay. Her phone dropped out, so.
Okay, well, whoever just put it, Rich, sister, Rich, just go ahead and take it.
Yeah, I did. I said I brought that up because we're getting into the situation of, okay, what's private then? Are we all going to have to be leery of private conversations? I mean, with the technology that we have now, but just maybe to just in general, you know, because there, you better believe a whole bunch of private conversations went on with somebody calling somebody N-word and nothing happened. But now with the technology and it's being made public, see, that's the key, I guess, when it's made public. You know, how serious do we take the private conversation?
All right, do you understand why people are outraged because of the position that this guy? First of all,
yeah.
I know that.
Oh, I understand all that.
The bottom line is that, you know,
that goes without saying.
Okay.
Yeah, I understand totally. That's without saying, but, you know.
Could I add something on that, Mr. J?
Absolutely, sir.
It really wasn't a private conversation. He was in a restaurant, and he made the statement so loud that people on the other side of the restaurant heard it. And it was a lady that was new to the area who heard it, and she waited a month before she went back to the restaurant and asked the owner, who was that person that made that remark? And she was told, and that began the course what we were talking about today.
Okay, because I know that the lead-in, a drop, had the fact that it was a waitress, but you're saying that it was someone that was a patron of the restaurant who overheard the comment.
Someone was a patron of the restaurant and also new to the town.
Okay. It is a town that has about, 600 people, and I think there's like 20 black people in the whole area there.
Yeah, small town.
Yeah, very
small
town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know the situation how private it was. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, what the report said, it was a private conversation, but, you know, I'm glad we have clarity here, and that's the beauty of people being able to come together and have conversations. Like you say, ordinary people with intelligent conversations, that's what the serious side is all about. But we are definitely running out of time on this segment. So before we get out of here, let me get everyone's final thoughts on this. Let me start with you, Rich. Just give me your final thoughts on this topic.
But I understand the bottom line. Like you said, you're public servant, and you're supposed to be a protector of the people. And you've got views like that, then, hey, you shouldn't be in that position. And in the end, whether it's private or not, once it becomes public, that's what, hey, once we know, and we know it was you, then you got to go.
All right. Hey, I'm with you. In a position of authority like that, you have to go. Jerome, give me your final thoughts on this topic, sir.
Well, my final thoughts is that it's common knowledge that when you're in positions like that, you work at the discretion of the chief executive. And so for every town and village or whatever, it goes up that way. If it's the DA in your area, the state DA or the attorney general can get them out. You're at the discretion. It's how checks and balances work. And your boss can actually fire you. And, again, they usually let them resign, but I agree that you, when you make statements like that and you don't care, it's the arrogance of people that make them do that. They all know this once they get their job, that you work at the discretion of your the chief executive in your town or city.
Yeah, I agree with that. Good comments. All right, who else do we have, Mr. Elias, on the line?
Bianchi came back in with us, man. So, Bianchi, your final thoughts on this.
Well, I agree also concur with the last speaker. People in that position, you can't make those statements. If you do, you got to go.
Callie, your statement?
Same thing. I concur with the whole panel. If you're that bold to make those statements, that's your belief, and you have to go. You have to go. And it's still amazing that people are still amazed that other people call us the N-word.
Yeah, even this way, even now, it's ridiculous. But it's never going to go away. We all know that. And Manic gets the first and last word. Mr. Elias, go ahead and give me your final thoughts. Go ahead and start that break while you're doing it, sir.
Well, hey, you know something, man? If you are indeed a public official, then, hey, you need to be aware of what you're saying and how you say it and what you say. So watch your words. You'll be in trouble if you don't.
All right, folks, that's a wrap. We'll be back, though, with Before We Go and Chatterbox. You're listening to the Serious Side of a beautiful Sunday morning. Keep it right here.
omówiono najważniejsze sprawy związane z dalszym rozwojem województwa i kraju.
The week that was in the news.
Robert Copeland, the police chief in the town of Wolfboro, New Hampshire, used the N-word when describing President Obama. Residents in the village of 6,000 people and beyond immediately started calling for his resignation. Copeland has refused to apologize for his remark.
Well, but before we go, quick look at some stories that made headlines this past week. That was a long clip, but don't worry about it. Listen, a couple of stories that's out there on the agenda. First of all, there's a rapper. Let's get this reduced down just a little bit. There's a rapper out there that actually was convicted because he rapped about two murders he committed during one of his rap songs. Jerome, how much sense does that make?
How much sense does it make to murder somebody? Because I don't care what he
raps,
he should be in jail.
Yes, wow. The guy raps about that he committed to, and the police, someone happened to hear the song on Facebook, and I don't know what, it was him. He actually committed the murder, and he rapped about it. Matter of fact, in the rap song, he talked about how he did it.
Off your mind. Go ahead, Elliot.
Yeah, you know, he's not the brightest rapper in the world, so now he'll be the one behind bars. So, hey, man, look, you know, that's what some rappers do. You know, Biggie rapped about how he used to move illegal substances, man. But, you know, if you want to rap about how you just killed somebody and it's fine, that makes no sense at all to me.
Yeah. And I agree, it doesn't make any sense to me. And on that note, it is time for Chatterbox. All right, so Chatterbox, before we read comments from the chat room and from social media, Mr. Elias, who do you have, my friend?
I got, I got Lavinia, but she said that's why he felt so comfortable, doubling down on what he said, unapologetically racist and a position of power, damn. And then I got one from Easy. He said that this guy better watch out and pray to God that the radio stations that the radio stations don't play "I Shot the Sheriff," so you better watch his back.
Leave it to Easy to provide a little bit of comic relief on a beautiful Sunday morning. All right, folks, that's it for Chatterbox. Coming up next after this short break, it is on a need-to-know basis with our main man, Jerome Esprit. But right now, it's time for another edition of Have You Seen Me? We'll be back after this.
Sir, have you seen this girl?
Hello, friends. I'm Jay, the host of The Jay Rouse Show and the serious side of The Jay Rouse Show. And it's time for another edition of Have You Seen Me, where we put the spotlight on missing children of color. Tonight we're heading to Georgia. Gwinnett Police is looking for a 26-year-old mother who hasn't been seen since Saturday morning. Police said Angela Robert was last seen in the parking lot of the Steeplechase Apartments in unincorporated Norcross at about 6 a.m. Saturday morning. Robert hasn't been seen or heard from since that time, and authorities said foul play has not been ruled out. Robert dropped off her 3-year-old daughter with a friend Friday before heading to a party in Atlanta later that evening, police said. Friends and authorities searched the wooded area around the apartments but found nothing of note, according to a news release from the Gwinnett County Police Department. Robert is described as 4'11", approximately 120 pounds, with long hair that is black with blonde tips. Anyone with information about Robert's whereabouts should call the Gwinnett County Police Department at 770-513-5300. Once again, that number is 770-513-5300. Pray for the safe return of this beautiful young lady. We ask that you pray for her family. If you'd like to see someone featured on Have You Seen Me, all you have to do is pick up the phone right now if you're listening to a live broadcast and dial 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272, and leave the information with one of our producers. Or you can go to our Facebook page, and type in the TGRS Radio Network and leave the information there, or you can contact me direct on Facebook at J-A-Y-R-I-L, that's J Ryle, or you can shoot us an email to the JRileShow@live.com. That's the JRileShow@live.com. Spelled J-R-I-L show@live.com. We pray for all people missing regardless of color. And until next time, I'm J Ryle, and you've been listening to Have You Seen Me? Where we focus our attention on missing people of color. Take care.
Somewhere in America, a mother is crying.
A family is torn.
A child is lost,
missing, or even abducted.
We need your help!
Contact your local police station
for a listing of missing children in your area,
or log on to www.missingkids.com
to obtain further information regarding missing children in your local community.
There's a next face you see.
Maybe a child that will need your help.
Help support America's missing!
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
The White House petition website has been bombarded by a series of secession requests.
The White House says the scandal involving former CIA Director David Petraeus and General John Allen was a surprise to the president.
All right, folks, it's on a need-to-know basis with our very own Jerome Lespree. I missed this segment last week. It's very informative, folks, and Jerome really kicked some knowledge on this. So, Jerome Lespree, the floor is yours, my brother.
All right, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I can't complain, my brother.
All right, now, there was a bunch of stories since I did miss a little bit last week, but I think you'll still find some of these stories relevant and entertaining. You know, the biggest thing that we missed over the last couple of weeks is that there's about another eight or so cases, or a little bit more than that, of teachers sleeping with students. Everybody acts like it doesn't happen, but since I missed a week, now it actually cracked up to about 12. So anyway, no African Americans were involved in that crash of public outcry. All right, now, President Obama this week joined September 11th survivors and rescuers at a dedication of a memorial museum on the site of the attacks, you know, the World Trade Center. And the president told the gatherers that it's a sacred place for of healing and hope. So there's a national September 11th memorial museum that includes thousands of personal items and parts of the World Trade Center tower inside of them. So, you know, in case you're in New York, it's right where the site sits. And get this, it is seven stories down to the bedrock of New York City.
Wow.
Really? Not even above ground, really. But they're the actual offices seven stories down.
Wow.
Yeah. So, President First Lady actually toured the museum, and there's pictures. There's a mangled fire truck in there. It cost $700 million in donations and public money to build it. So the museum at the original site of the World Trade Center is, you know, it's largely underground, and it's fully open to the public May 21st.
You know something? I got to get to New York and check it out, because I was there, you know, after it happened, you know, maybe years after it happened, and it was very eerie just to see that all that open ground, man. So I'd like to get there and see that, man.
Yeah, and just remember, under that ground is where all of those seven stories is as well.
Wow.
No, I'm just saying, like, we think of building skyscrapers up, but a building so tall, they had to build just as many stories down. Or not exact amount, but a good portion of it was below the ground. Huh. Now, Ohio parents Adam and Heather Freck ran from their room of their 10-month-old baby, Emma, after hearing a man's voice, quickly realizing the baby monitor was hacked and an online intruder was talking to their child. Now, the couple said they feel violated by the midnight encounter, only worsened by the fact that they have no way of finding out who this guy was. But he was screaming in the baby monitor, wake up, baby, he's yelling to the baby. And it has a picture. It has a video.
What?
And they came, you know, he said they then just screaming at her to wake her up. And the two also didn't know whether the hacker gotten into the device before. They don't know if it's the first time he did it or what, but he was yelling at the baby to try to wake it up.
Wow.
Isn't that a horrible story? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to start off with that. Okay. Now, the United States has become the world's biggest wine market last year. It beat out France into second place for the first time as consumption fell in a country that is widely seen as, you know, the drink's natural home is France. But U.S. consumers bought 768 million gallons of wine in 2013. That's a rise of 5% from 2012. And French consumption fell 7% to 742 million gallons. No, don't get it twisted. I think they said that they need to do more study, but U.S. drinkers still are likely far behind in terms of consumption per head because they drink almost 1.2 bottles a week per head.
Damn.
Our drinkers drink is what this story is telling us.
Right,
the ones
right.
who are drinking for the rest of us, they're putting it in.
Right.
They are going
wow.
in on all of them. All right. So a Florida teenager has earned her college degree at the age of 16 a week before she graduates high school. Now, Grace Bush received her bachelor's degree in criminal justice from Florida Atlantic University, but now she's looking forward to going to her double celebration because her high school graduation was this week. So she took she had a 3.8 grade point average and earned her 4-year degree in just 3 years in high school.
That's impressive. That's very impressive, man. Wow.
I know. See, and they think we don't have these talented kids out here. All the bad news stories. Now, when President George H.W. Bush found out that the administration would serve as the inspiration for ABC's fictional political drama Scandal, he said he was honored. But Bush, former cabinet member Andrew Card, said that on behalf of Bush. But despite the seedy nature of the show, the former president was flattered by the show that would imply how physically attractive he is. Isn't that arrogant? Now, so George H.W. Bush, since Judy Smith worked for communications during the Bush administration, he said, oh, they're basing that character off of me. So Smith did say, she said, unlike her on-screen counterpart, she did not have an affair with her boss when she served as a special assistant as the deputy press secretary to Bush. And Smith once was asked if she was involved in real life, and she said absolutely not. It's a fictional show based on a crisis manager. But he said, cool. Like, that was his thing. Speaking of the Bush family, you know, Jeb Bush is, you know, everybody's talking about him running for president. So I felt compelled to do this story just so that when we talk about this on the serious side that you guys have something to compare to. Now, Jeb Bush has a lot of scandal. In a recent column that came out, that his wife, I want to say she's Colombian, she ended up getting arrested from the customs for only declaring $500 when she had $19,000 worth of goods from a trip to Paris. And
wow.
His daughter was arrested, and while on probation, she was caught with crack in her shoe. So Jeb Bush is going to – she was caught with crack at a rehab, by the way.
Damn. Wow.
Yeah, she
Damn.
Left rehab. Yeah, she was sentenced to rehab, and while she was in rehab, she had crack in her shoe. So
W's children weren't the only one that was pretty messed up in that family. Wow, man.
Right. So his daughter Noelle was arrested at a drive-through pharmacy window in 2002 while her father was governor, tried to buy anti-anxiety drug Xanax with another person's prescription, and while she was in jail for failing to live up to her rehab program, during her rehab program is when she had crack in her shoe. She hid crack inside her shoe.
Wow. Damn. All right. Damn, man.
An Oklahoma teacher, English teacher, is in trouble for giving a failing student an A grade after he told police that he had sex with her multiple times, and she began begging him in December, and quickly, you know, things turned physical, and he just turned 18, so she's in jail. And also another Florida high school teacher had sex with a 16-year-old at least 7 to 10 times where drugs were involved. He avoided prison time. His sentence was 2 years of house arrest and 5 years of probation.
Let me guess, he was caught
in a Red Lobster, and she caught him in video and audio taped him within the police.
Wow.
And he still only got probation.
Wow. My God, man. What is going on, man?
Huh?
What is going on? What is going on with these teachers and these kids, man?
I don't get it. Yeah, because it seemed like it is just so abnormal for all of this stuff to be going on. But at the same time, it's like we act like it's new when we hear that story because people don't talk about them. So we're doing it in news. And by the way, the next generation of cassette tape, remember the regular cassette tapes?
Yeah.
Back in the days for the boomboxes? Mm-hmm. Sony developed the cassette tape that has 3,700 times more storage space than a Blu-ray disc player.
Damn.
A regular cassette tape.
Well, a lot of good it's going to do you now because
it has 185 terabytes of data. That's 70 times more than the capacity for traditional tapes and equivalent to, you know, the 3,700 Blu-rays. So they are doing that. Xerox is, and IBM, I think, is working on another one, but apparently cassette tapes are about to make a comeback. And you can
really?
With the cassette tapes, they're just not digital. You can still get analog on cassette tapes, but they made them so that the data capacity is high.
Damn. Wow, I didn't know they were making a comeback, man. That's definitely good to know.
Keep your cassettes. They're storing them for big companies who need big data storage, but imagine how much music you can have at about 3,000 Blu-ray disc players.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard this story. I don't know if Jay is still on, but in Missouri City, Texas, that's right outside of Houston, parents called for the suspension of a school bus driver who abandoned their children, threw the keys at one of the students, and said, "How about you drive yourself home?" Now, the bus driver was from the Fort Bend Independent School District, and she was investigated. This is one of the stories that we missed last week at the Baines Middle School. There was their students, and the driver, she was a white bus driver with some minority students. The parents wrote a letter because they said a few months ago, the white bus driver allegedly called the black kids on the bus N-words, and the incident happened when some of the kids started singing a song called Shrimp Fried Rice. It's a YouTube song, some silly song the kids made up. And she said it was racist against Asian people. So she got angry, told all the non-black kids to get off the bus, and then she told the students that it's racist, you guys are all N-words, and if you don't, and how would you like it if you were called the N-word? Now, the bus company didn't fire her. They suspended her.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I just thought it. I just share that part
she
of that story.
She should have been fired, man, from the beginning. I mean, really?
Hey, you know, and we talk about that, you know, when you talk about all of these stories where people are saying, hey, racism is making a comeback. It ain't making a comeback. People are reporting
it's
it because we have internet.
Right.
That's why.
It's never left. That's what she said earlier. She's like, if we're making a change, there's no change coming for real.
Oh, yeah. It's coming, all right. Now, a 26-year-old fortune cookie factory worker died when he fell into a dough mixing machine. This was in Houston, so this is why it kind of caught my eye. The Wonton Food Company, it's a branch of them. It's one of the one of the biggest makers of fortune cookies in the United States. They make around 4 million cookies a day. And they're New York headquartered, but a small number of their factories in Houston. And the Wan Kong Food Company had no prior safety, occupation safety, health administration issues, but they had no run-ins, and a worker fell into the machine.
Wow.
Okay. I know, it wasn't even a good story, but check this story out, because you want to talk about racism. Now, I don't know how racist this is, so you're going to have to give me this, LES. Now,
right.
I don't know if you ever heard of Weibo, but it's the Chinese version of Facebook. Have you ever heard of that?
Never heard of it.
Okay.
Never.
Thousands of users are participating in a beauty and ugliness identification method, and it says how to determine if you're beautiful is to place your index finger on your chin and touch the tip of your nose, and if your lips touch, if they do, congratulations, you're officially beautiful. They have not been sanctioned for this, but this is some craze that's going around in China. It was interesting, but who knew? A lot of people are going to be mad about that story, but I just thought I'd share that. Wasn't really sure what that meant to anybody, but it was just odd that that is a new craze going around in
I want to know how many people tried it while you were saying the story.
while I did the story?
I want to know how many people tried it.
I'm sure. Hey, it was just a story. Now, some of Africa's most influential and wealthiest women converged on Nigeria last week at an empowerment conference for female leaders. The WIE African Symposium brings together trailblazers from the world of business, entertainment, and fashion. They had someone from CNN, someone from Arise TV, Johnson Publishing Company, Desiree Rogers, who was the president's social secretary, and the richest woman or the first female billionaire, Furushiro Alaja. I don't know if you remember her, but she unseated Oprah, and I told you she was single. Remember that, Elias?
Yeah.
So she headlined. Yeah. Oh, she's a cutie, too. Never mind. We'll talk about that after the show. But she headlined the Conference of Women Leaders around the world, just in case you guys wanted to know. And also, Jet Magazine, a six-decade-old magazine aimed at African-Americans, has stopped publishing in print to become a digital app. Now, it was founded in 1951. The Digest Size magazine says the print version was not cost-effective and going digital would adapt it to its readers. And the moves came as their declining sales for Jet slumbered.
Wow, okay. Yeah. I guess there'll be no more pasted Jet Beauties of the Week on your mirror, huh?
You know, I haven't seen a Jet Beauty of the Week in a while, so I'm going to have to go get my collector's item. But more importantly, I do want to say, you know, Jet was sold, Jet and Ebony was sold to venture capitalists, and the white company that owns them made that statement. So they bought Jet and Ebony, and now they downsized them. They weren't owned by black people for last year and a half anyway. Just wanted to share that.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that a shame? So
yes,
if you want to start a magazine like Jet, feel free. The barbershops still need them.
Right. You know, come on, man. I mean, John Johnson's probably turning over in his grave right now. But, hey, that's bad, man. It is what it is, though. You know, I guess, you got to keep up with modern times, man. I don't say going digital is bad, but, man, just to give it to the company that you know, your father started, man, that's just, I guess, man. Wow.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and really quickly, in courthouse news, there's a couple, but one is Capital One called the man 221 times trying to collect his alleged debt in violation of federal law, so he was happy and he went to court. And Whitney Houston's estate claimed in court that a company it hired to sell her house changed the locks and chained the gate and denied access to her personal property after the bank approved the sale and so now they have to go sue for a personal property. So when you see it pop up on eBay and stuff, somebody jacked their stuff, and they won't give it back.
Wow. Wow. That's bad, man. That is. That time has been through enough, man. Wow.
All right. All right. I have more.
Okay. Yeah. Give me.
How do you know how much time we had?
Give me two more.
Okay. So Kellogg said it will no longer use all natural on or nothing artificial labels on certain Kashi products as a part of an agreement settled their class action suit. The company based in Battle Creek will also pay $5 million because they're just saying the settlement, which was filed May 2nd, is subject to court approval, but the mislabeling would imply that they were natural products and they weren't natural. So they did. PepsiCo also removed that wording from their packages and changed their Simply Natural line project, or changed, what was it, Natural Products to Simply Natural. And also Frito-Lay, their chips is just called Simply opposed to Simply Natural.
Wow.
You know, and
okay.
Likewise with Quaker Oats too. It doesn't say natural Quaker granola. It just says Quaker granola.
Okay.
They all started to change it a little bit. And also, you know, I just want to say that, you know, the world's greatest performer living, I guess we can put it that way, would be Prince. He turns 56 next month, and he's on the cover of the June Essence magazine. And according to the magazine, he decided once and for all it's time for him to stop using bad language in front of women and children. And he said that, you know, do you curse in front of your kids? Do you curse in front of your mother? So he announced that he's going to stop cursing on his music.
Wow.
All right.
Okay.
And in concert.
So I guess he won't be doing Erotic City anymore is what you're saying, Jamal.
he said he was young then.
I guess. Bro. Well, that's
there
how they need it. That's all they need to know, best with your office, but we'll be right back after these messages, folks.
All right.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. In Southern California, residents forced from their homes by a series of wildfires in San Diego County are returning this weekend, including Jamie Williams.
It was just such a wonderful blessing to be back here home. It was almost teary-eyed kind of thing, so it's great, it's wonderful.
A series of at least 10 fires spanning some 39 square miles have burned through parts of San Diego County since Tuesday. They've destroyed 11 homes, an apartment complex, and two businesses. Firefighters are watching for flare-ups, but fear this is only the beginning of a long fire season. California fire officials say crews have already responded to more than 1,500 fires this year, compared with 800 during an average year. A cabinet shuffle appears to be in the works at the White House. The administration is not commenting, but President Obama is said to be planning to nominate Housing Secretary Sean Donovan to be budget director and is considering San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro to succeed Donovan. Nigeria is getting the support of Western and neighboring African nations as it pledges to defeat the Boko Haram militants who are holding more than 250 schoolgirls hostage. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan and his African counterparts approved an action plan at this weekend's meeting in Paris.
Representatives from the U.S., Britain, and France teamed up with the leaders in Nigeria, Benin, Chad, Cameroon, and Niger to counter an organization that has killed 2,000 people this year and is blamed for the kidnapping of more than 250 schoolgirls in Nigeria last month. The International Action Plan will involve coordination of surveillance efforts aimed at finding the girls. French President François Hollande says the plan will also include intelligence sharing, tight monitoring of Nigeria's borders, and the capacity to intervene quickly in case of another Boko Haram attack. Military experts from Britain, France, and the United States are advising Nigeria on its counterterrorism strategy, though Western powers have ruled out deploying forces to help locate the missing girls. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper has signed into law so-called right-to-try legislation. As Grace Hood from member station KUNC reports, Colorado is now the first state to allow terminally ill patients access to experimental drugs.
The new law allows but doesn't require drug companies to provide experimental medications outside of clinical trials. Right now in most states it can take years before potentially life-saving treatments make it to the market. And advocates say this patient population doesn't have time to wait. Opponents say the measure could potentially do more harm than good by allowing patients access to medications that haven't been approved by the FDA. In Arizona, voters will weigh in on the issue this fall. For NPR News, I'm Grace Hood in Fort Collins, Colorado.
And this is NPR News.
Well, folks, that's our show for this week, and we're giving our final thoughts right now. So we're giving our final thoughts, the ladies first, our rich sister, since you're still with us. Give us your final thoughts.
A great show today. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of it, and just continue prayers for me and my healing. I'm still on recoup from surgery, so that's why I didn't go to church today. So it was great hanging out with y'all today. Y'all have a great, wonderful Sunday.
All right. Thank you, Rich Sister. Once again, Jerome Esprit, the smartest man in the world. I'm not going to even debate that one. Jerome Esprit, your final thoughts, my brother.
Well, thank you for that. I just want to say I enjoyed myself today on the show, and everybody just have a good week. I don't really have any final thoughts on that stuff, but we probably need to pay attention more to the Donald Sterling case than any other case, because the NBA Players Union is about to do something that even black civil rights leaders have not done, and that would be they were going to walk out. And we've never seen that without that leaking, and those guys were united. So I got to say I'm proud of those guys for actually sticking together on that.
Right. That was it. I agree wholeheartedly, man, because that's that power just to walk out. And, folks, my final thought is this, you know. Hey, look. Increase the minimum wage. There's no reason that the richest country in the world should be living in poverty. That, you know, you got people who really are ready to work and want to work, working in poverty. And then we talk about, you know, go to school and better yourself. Well, you got college graduates that are working at McDonald's. So, look, folks, let's stop the madness. If it can work in New Zealand and Australia, where the minimum wage is $18 an hour, hey, increase these people's wages. And Jerome, it's free. But that being said, my friend, what time is it?
It is time for the serious side of the Jay Rowe Show.
So, hey, for myself, Jerome Esprit, Jay Rowe, Dr. Adelia, Callie Boy, Vanessa, and a whole lot of us, we'd like to say thanks for tuning in, folks, and we'll see you next week. Thank you once again for tuning in to the serious side of the Jay Rowe Show.